Translation. The Lord appeared as the Hayagriva incarnation in a sacrifice performed by me, Brahma. He is the personified sacrifices, and the hue of his body is golden. He is the personified Vedas as well, and the supersoul of all demigods. When he breathed, all the sweet sounds of the Vedic hymns came out of his nostrils. Purport. The Vedic hymns are generally meant for sacrifices performed by fruitive workers who also want to satisfy the demigods to achieve their fruitive result. But the Lord is the personified sacrifices and personified Vedic hymns. Therefore, one who is directly a devotee of the Lord is a person who has automatically both served the purposes of sacrifices and pleased the demigods. The devotees of the Lord may not perform any sacrifice or may not please the demigods as per Vedic injunctions. And still, the devotees are on a higher level than the fruitive workers or the worshippers of different demigods. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane. Namaste Sharashati Deve Gaudavani Pacharine. Nirvise Sasanyavadi Paschati Dasatani. So, indirectly, maybe some of you might say directly, but it's not explicitly stated here, but Prabhupada is glorifying the devotees, and by glorifying the devotees, he's glorifying pure devotional service. So really, you could say this purport is a purport about pure devotional service, although it doesn't directly say anything about pure devotional service, but it says what the devotees are not, and they're not like demigod worshippers. They're not asking Krishna for something. So they understand, we know what a devotee is. So there's a story about the devotees first going to India, and this was, I believe, they went in October of 1970. That was, these were the first devotees from the West. And at that time in ISKCON, we knew nothing really about culture. And we were all, there were no Indians in the movement, and mostly Americans. Well, you might say, well, that's because you're all Americans. You don't know anything about culture anyway. But that may be true, but we didn't know anything about Indian culture. So at one point, Prabhupada told the devotees, when you take prasadam, you have to sit on your left hand. Because if you eat with your left hand in India, people will think you are a full-blown, bona fide malecha, because you don't touch with your left hand, right? You don't give, you don't take. You touch one thing with your left hand, but nothing sacred, right? And sometimes devotees used to think everything belongs to Krishna, so they would just take it. So like the sweet shops, they would just take sweets. Bona fide Americans. Yeah, it all belongs to Krishna, just take it. And things of that nature. So one man came to Srila Prabhupada complaining. He said, your devotees, they have no culture. They don't know. Like ABCs of culture. Prabhupada said, yes, I know. He said, but they will do anything I ask them. And that is their qualification. So Prabhupada didn't see our disqualifications as disqualifications, because he saw we had the qualification that we would do anything he asked. The other day I was listening to a lecture. I think I mentioned this yesterday. I don't have the reference because this devotee didn't give it. And Prabhupada asked, what is the most important verse in the Vedas? And of course, everybody gave their verse. Manmana Bhava Madbhakto or Sarva Dharma Parachaja, like that. And Prabhupada said the most important verse is Yasya Deve Para Bhaktir Yata Devi Tata Guru. If you have faith in Guru, like you have in Krishna, then Tasyarte Katita Mahatmanaha. You'll understand all the Vedas. And then the letters we've been reading this morning, in the morning after Mangalarti, does anyone remember what they said? The Prabhupada is saying, you just satisfy the spiritual master, your life will be perfect. So when we discuss pure devotional service, of course we can discuss what it means. But Prabhupada is getting very specific here, that it means pleasing the spiritual master. And of course, for us in ISKCON, that means our goal is to understand what Prabhupada wants, understand bhakti as he's given it in his books, and follow it exactly. You know, when something interesting happened when Prabhupada left, and it could happen to you when all the Prabhupada disciples go. It may or may not, but after Prabhupada left, some devotees were going to different godbrothers. And because those godbrothers had experience of what happened after Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, so they were like, what do we do now? How do we deal with this? And one of the things he said that came to be quite true, it was not a prediction, it was just a fact. He said, when your guru goes, you will realize that much of what you thought you knew, you didn't. Because he was always there correcting, and it seemed like you just understood because he was there. And everything in the movement was always in the right place. And you didn't really have to understand because he understood. And you didn't always realize that you didn't understand because you didn't have to because he understood. So when he leaves, there are a lot of, I don't know if you had that experience, Vishwambar. But we had that with Prabhupada. Yeah, you had the same, yeah. You think you understood, then, you know, Guru Maharaj said this, like, well, what did he mean? And the disciples are discussing, sometimes disagreeing. So you think you understand, but you don't always. And so our duty is to understand Prabhupada. And there'll always be people who will misunderstand because we have motives, and sometimes we read Prabhupada's words with motives. And we see sometimes what we want to see. And we have proof of this. Because we could actually do an experiment. This would be so funny. We all read the chapter of Kardama and Devahuti. And then we ask the women, what did you remember? We ask the men, what did you remember? And you know what the men are going to remember? How the women should be. And you know what the women are going to remember? How magnanimous Kardama was. And the men will pass over Kardama. I don't know if the women will pass over it, but the men, like, they'll go, what did you read, men? Oh, Devahuti, chaste, devoted, you know, austere, whatever her husband. Did you read the part about Kardama, you know, providing for her and reciprocating? Oh, I didn't. Was that in there? I didn't notice. You laugh, but it's actually true. This happens a lot. So, we're trying to understand pure devotional service with an impure mind and sometimes impure motives. And then the guru tells you what pure devotional service is and you misunderstand it because you want to understand in a particular way. So we have to be careful to understand Prabhupada as he wanted to be understood, not as we would like to paint him, you know, because you want to make a point. Okay, that point is there in Prabhupada's books. But it's not the only point. And I remember one lecture Prabhupada was giving. And Prabhupada did encourage single men in their brahmachari life. And sometimes I think one of the reasons Prabhupada encouraged it, because as you may have heard the lecture, Prabhupada said, when I met my spiritual master, he told me to preach. And Prabhupada said, I should have done it then. But I was married, I couldn't. And so sometimes Prabhupada would preach to the brahmacharis that it's simpler if you stay single. He said, I have experience. And one time he told a devotee, he said, managing ISKCON is easier than managing my family. So he would encourage brahmacharya life. And, you know, our philosophy is there, you know. Sense control, celibacy, simplicity like that. And I heard lectures where Prabhupada was really, like, you know, pushing this point. But at the end, he said, but there's also Grihastha Ashram. If you can, you know, he'd always, like, balance it. He'd never just be one side. He'd always balance it. And sometimes we don't do that. We just find a point, look what Prabhupada said, and get our hammer and knock everyone in the head with it, right? But I was fortunate because Prabhupada was living in Los Angeles while I was living there. And when I was living there, he was there for 3 months straight. And so do the math. How many classes do you hear in 3 months? Like 90 plus classes. So it's interesting to go, you know, Bhagavatam class every day and Prabhupada's giving it. You just kind of understand how he gives classes after a while because you're going to them every day. And so I'm just 22 years old. What do I know? 2 years a devotee, 2.5 or something. But I just noticed that the classes were like 360. It was never like just one point. There was always this balance. And if he didn't balance it that day, it was like the next class was the opposite point. I just noticed it. I wasn't like coming to any conclusions about the future of ISKCON and people interpreting Prabhupada. But I just noticed that. It was always like all bases covered and relatable to everyone. Most of us are not 360. We're like super this or super that, and we tend to have lenses to see things in that way we are. So to understand pure devotional service, we really want to understand it as objectively, if it's possible to be objective in a subjective body, mind, and senses, but as objectively as possible, we want to try to understand it. So I want to try to explain my understanding of how Prabhupada explained pure devotional service, so because that's really what's being described here. And so we try to get like a maybe 360 view of pure bhakti. When Srila Prabhupada left, some people, maybe not immediately, well, yeah, even immediately, when Srila Prabhupada left, 11 people became gurus, and there were now 11 pure devotees in ISKCON. Before, there was only one. So that's what we thought. And you're looking at this thinking, that's stupid. How could you think like that? Well, we were confused. We didn't, like I said, when Prabhupada left, what we thought we knew became confusing. So instead of one pure devotee in ISKCON, there were now 11. And if you weren't amongst the 11, that meant you were not a pure devotee. So that was a big misunderstanding. And it's interesting, maybe you know the story. Once a devotee asked Prabhupada how many pure devotees were on the planet, which is really, the question was really, are any of your godbrothers pure devotees? But he didn't ask that question. He just said, how many pure devotees? And he was expecting Prabhupada might say, well, there's, you know, Krishnadas Babaji, and there, you know, like there's three or something like that. Or my godbrother so-and-so, he's a pure devotee. Or maybe all my godbrothers are pure devotees, something like that. And Prabhupada asked the question, how many devotees are in ISKCON? And apparently at that time there were about 1,000. And Prabhupada said, so there are 1,000 pure devotees on the planet. So we weren't expecting that answer. Like, we're pure devotees? What do you mean we're pure devotees? And that was Prabhupada's definition, that story. I said, they'll do anything I ask. That's what he meant. They will do whatever I ask. They're pure devotees because my desire is above their desire. You know, they may want to go to sleep now and I ask them, stay up and do the seva. They will do it. They're pure devotees. So that's one definition of pure devotee. That the desire of your guru comes before your desire. You'll make that sacrifice for him. And then you might say, oh, I can do that, but I don't feel like I'm a pure devotee. All right? But the definition's 360. We will get to other definitions. Of course, we think pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada is a pure devotee. There are other pure devotees in ISKCON, very advanced, very elevated. They have no material desires, nothing. Those are the pure devotees. And then there's the rest of us.
the fallen Prabhus and Matajis just struggling with impure bhakti and so many anarthas. Well, that's not exactly how Prabhupada defined it. So then, and it's not how scripture defines it. And it's, I think I mentioned this yesterday or in another class the other day. This is, Prabhupada's making a point that you're taking a conditioned soul who definitely is impure, who will do anything his guru asks, and telling and saying he's a pure devotee. But if you go to the, if you go to Shastra to define pure devotee, it doesn't look like he or she is a pure devotee, does it? Looks like, well, you're Bhajana Kriya, or, you know, maybe Anartha Nivritti, and if you've been around for, you know, a few decades, maybe Nishta, like beginning to get to Nishta. And so it doesn't look like a pure devotee. So then we come to the Anyabhilashito Shunya verse from Nectar Devotion. And in that verse, it doesn't say you're free of desire. It says that you're free of the motive to satisfy yourself. So this is like interesting. It doesn't say you can have desire. You want to enjoy everything, right? But when you serve Krishna, you serve him to please him. That's pure devotional service, even if you're not pure. That's good news, isn't it? That means we can be pure devotees even though we're not pure devotees. Does that make sense? Because what your desire is and what your motive is, they don't have to be the same. Yeah, I want to be like, you know, I want everyone to love me and praise me. And, you know, I want to be like famous and, you know, like. But I know that's completely bogus. I know that. So I come here to Bhaktivedanta Manor. Krishna, please, like Brahma, I pray I don't become proud because I just want to be glorified. That's in my heart. And I come, I try to be humble. I try to do service with the right mood, not to get some recognition, just to do it to please Prabhupada, please the Vaishnavas. And that's considered pure devotional service, which means any of us can do pure devotional service. But I think one of the most beautiful verses of the Bhagavatam is a verse where a devotee is describing how he's full of material desires. And he's offering a prayer to Krishna saying, I am just your devotee and I just want to serve you. And that's it. But I have all these desires. And then he says, but I don't care. I don't care about these desires because all I want to do is serve you. So you can have stockpiles of material desires. I'm like, whatever. That's just like past samskaras. I'm not paying attention to that. We all have them. We're all haunted by past samskaras. Did you ever get haunted by a past samskara? And you're thinking and desiring something, and you're thinking, why am I desiring that? I don't even want it. Past samskaras, like they're haunting you. Ooh, you want this. No, I don't. Yes, you do. No, I don't. So this devotee is praying like that. He's saying, I have all these desires. I don't know where they are coming from. I don't know why. I don't know what I can do about them. I'm trying to control them. They're just there. He said, but those desires are not going to budge me from doing pure devotional service. They're just like, I'll just ignore them, tolerate them. If, you know, I've committed so many sins in the past that these are the ramifications. Okay, whatever, you know. But I'm not going to let it bother me. I'm going to do pure devotional service. That is one of the most beautiful verses, because if you don't understand that, you can become really easily discouraged, isn't it? It's like, look at me, I'm a mess. You know, I've been chanting Hare Krishna for like half a millennium, and still, you know, I'm a bum. I still think like a bum. You know, it's like, take my beads, I'm turning them in. I give up, you know. We had a japa retreat once after the 64 round day. One devotee's, everybody's sharing. She said, hanging my beads up, that's it. I give up, you know. I wanted, you know, she must have wanted like to be experiencing all
all the Ashtaka Babas, you know, the eight Babas. But it's a slow process. And when we understand, yes, this is pure devotional service, even though I'm not pure, because I'm not giving into it. Hare Krishna. So, I want to give you an encouraging thought. Okay, this is. I want you all to pat yourself on the back for this, right? Now you're all here in the temple, right? So I'm going to make an assumption you're all serious about devotional service to some degree. Otherwise, you would probably not be here right now. Well, I guess if you live here, you don't have a choice. And if you don't come, you don't get breakfast. So that could be another reason. But I will assume you actually want to be here, right? Is that okay? Yeah, I want to be here. Okay. Now, I will assume, if you're conditioned so, you probably have some anartas. Is that a safe assumption? Raise your hand if you have no anartas. Okay. So I'm pretty accurate. We have sincere devotees with anartas. Right? Yes? Did you have anartas when you joined? Yeah. You're still battling with some of those same anartas? You know, like, envy. You ever become envious of someone? Has that ever happened to any? Am I the only one? Oh, yeah. You ever want something you don't need? You ever think about enjoying something that has, like, no relation to bhakti? Here's the encouragement. In spite of that, you're all still here. You haven't left. Give yourself a pat on the back. Way to go. Good job. Yeah. I'm tolerating my mind. I'm tolerating these anartas. That's pure devotional service. I haven't given up. Because if you don't think like that, you know, you can get very discouraged. You can get very discouraged just because you are who you are. Right? Like, we come as conditioned souls. Being a conditioned soul is pretty discouraging. Isn't it? And being a pure devotee is like, that's amazing. And we want to be pure devotees, but it takes time. So this is another aspect of pure devotional service. You tolerate all your anarthas in a way that they don't become a major problem, so you can keep going on in devotional service. So you look at yourself and go, I am such a rascal, my rascal mind. I have so many anarthas. And you stop and say, but somehow or other, I haven't given in to them, or I've given in, but I've rectified myself. That's amazing, don't you think? You're still here, despite it, you know. And Krishna's going, yeah, it's my man, it's my woman, they're still here. They won't give up. And Krishna knows. And therefore, sometimes when you have these anarthas and you're struggling, you can think, Krishna knows what's going on, and I'm going to show him who's who and what's what. I'm not going to give in, even though this thing is pumping on me. Go for it. Do it. You want it. I'm not going to do it. And Krishna's saying, that's my man. That's my woman. They didn't give in. He's not saying, oh, look at you. You have anarthas. I don't want to see you until you're pure. He doesn't think like that. In a sense, like, you know, like one time Prabhupada said, he said, the grihasthas, he said, that's the Babaji ashram, because Babajis wear white. He said, the grihasthas, they're actually higher, it's a higher ashram than the sannyasis. Did you know that? And he said, the reason is because the sannyasi, he doesn't live with Maya. He just, you know, lives in the ashram with some brahmacharis, he doesn't have much. He doesn't have to deal with Maya. He said, but the grihasthas, they live with Maya, and they live with Maya, but they don't engage with Maya, so they're better than the sannyasis. And when you see Keshava Maharaj, you can tell him that. I just want to tell you that I'm better than you, but you got it easy, and I'm living with Maya, and I don't give in to Maya, right? So, no, don't tell him that. Well, if you tell him, don't tell him I told you to tell him that. Because, you know. So, it's the same thing. We're all living with Maya in our mind, and we don't give into your Babaji's. You're with Maya, and you're not giving into Maya. So that's pure devotional service. Of course, you have, you know, Uttam Adhikari pure devotional service, but This is pure devotional service in our on our stage. Now, there's one more thing that we're becoming discouraged just because we are who we are. We've committed so many sinful activities. But I want to say something that I think is important that you may not understand. If you ever see or hear or read or see videos of stories about Prabhupada, he never chastised people for who they were. He chastised them for the mistake they made. Like, you stupid idiot, if you had a brain, you'd be dangerous. Prabhupada never said that. He said, you did this wrong, what are you going to do? That was the wrong way to do it. So he's never shaming you, making you feel like there's something wrong with you as a conditioned soul. That's how we think about ourselves, isn't it? Something wrong with me, you know, I have this desire. Prabhupada never did that. Why? And we read this morning, Thakur Haridas took birth as a, today's his appearance, disappearance day, took birth as a Muslim. So Prabhupada's explaining, to show that anyone with any past can become a devotee. Om apavitra pavitrava. Whether purified or sarvavashtam, wherever you've been, whatever you've done, no problem. So that's how we are accepted by Prabhupada. So he never looked at us, and, you know, initiation, kind of checking us out, and then saying, that one over there, I don't think so, out, you know. He never did that. And certainly Prabhupada could see our heart, that's for sure. What did he see? He saw that one, he's sincere, sincere, let him sit in the initiation. He's full, chock-a-block, anarthas, he's sincere, that's all, that's all. And I once did a study and said, I went on the Veda base, searched, what is the qualification for bhakti? And the main answer that came up, like 90% of the time, 95, if, I don't even know if there was another answer actually, was sincerity. So you can be rascal number one or rascal number two or three. You know, you could be in the top 10 of rascals in the creation. And if you're sincere, that's your qualification, and that's what Krishna sees, despite all this other stuff. And that's what Prabhupada saw. I mean, I'm, you know, where do we come from? And when I was a young devotee, lots and lots of devotees were joining the temple, and every night I would pray, Krishna, send devotees. Radharani, send devotees. Because I didn't know how to make anybody a devotee. I was just a new devotee. Like, Krishna, help. We have a temple. We have to fill it up. And I think I was in the temple a year and a half, and there were like 20 devotees came somehow, you know. And the GBC told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, this Mahatma Das, he's a sincere boy. He said, he must be sincere, otherwise why would Krishna send him so many devotees? So I can testify that I'm also a rascal number one. I'm in the top 10 of rascals. But I try to be sincere, and Krishna sent, and Prabhupada recognized. And he could have chastised me. If Prabhupada knew every thought I was thinking, I would have been, you know, chastised at every moment. But he said he's sincere. So that's what Prabhupada saw, because that's the qualification. Your conditioning is not a problem. It's just what it is. It'll go away, you know. You don't have to worry about it. Just don't give in to it and let it sit there, you know. Just go, yeah, whatever. Be quiet, whatever. I'm not listening to you. That's about it. And then go on with your bhakti. And that's for us, that's pure devotional service. And so when you do your service, you do it to please Krishna. That's why. That's it. I want to please Krishna. That's pure bhakti. That's the motive. The motive. Why are you doing it? Right? Why do you do anything? Right? To please Krishna. Not to show off. Not to get something. And that's pure devotional service. And we can do that, right? Can you do it? Will you do it is another question. But can you do it? The answer is definitely we can if we choose to. So we're supposed to end at 8:30, is that right? I'm not famous for having short question and answer sessions, so I better stop. They were in Poland, they were lasting a minimum 1.5 hours. Yeah, actually, everywhere I went. But we can't do that here, because this is England, and I would get in trouble. Yeah. Okay. Just having fun. All right, question. Yes?
What you're saying there, oh.
What you're saying there reminds me of this verse in 10th canto. Here it is. The prayers to Lord Brahma. And when he says, "My dear Lord, he one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy on him, all the time suffering the reactions of our past misdeeds and offering respectful obeisances with his heart, his words, and his body, is directly eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim." That's epitome of what you said.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. We have to, you know, we talk about tolerance. And when we think of tolerance, we think we have to tolerate the weather, have to tolerate the chilies and the prasadam, too many, or have to tolerate other people. But, you know, one of the main people we have to tolerate is ourselves. Because we can get discouraged by our, you know, just examine ourselves. It's kind of depressing, isn't it? But there's no need to be depressed, because we can go on with pure devotional service and just tolerate, and we get Krishna's mercy. And it's a beautiful verse and a beautiful thought that Krishna knows what we're tolerating. And when you know that Krishna knows, and he's pleased that you tolerate, and he doesn't want you to denigrate yourself for having anarthas. That's just kind of normal. That goes with getting a physical body. You know, why do we get a physical body? Because we have anarthas, like, right? Like, so no surprises here. You know, this is just normal conditioned life, but not a reason to be discouraged. It's not a reason to be discouraged, even though it's discouraging. Because devotional service is way more encouraging, right? Because by bhakti, you can overcome it. So that's the encouraging part. So what part do you want to focus on? How bad you are, or how beautiful bhakti is? That was my point. Prabhupada always focused on how beautiful bhakti was. And we were so conditioned when Prabhupada was here, because we were young devotees, and we never thought, "Woe is me, it's so bad." We just thought Krishna consciousness is so blissful. We weren't focused on how bad we were, because the environment was ecstatic. So, you know, Prabhupada wanted us to relish the environment, yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the class. So what is the reason, what reason can we give that sometimes we feel the anarthas being very strong and sometimes they're quite low? Sometimes, you know, you just slept, you had a very good day, maybe you ended with kirtan. Right. And
that was the morning. Pizza. It was the pizza at night.
Oh, okay.
It could be many things. I know what you're saying. Well, the Gita, Krishna says the modes of nature, you know, fluctuate. And until you're on the stage of nishta, anything before nishta, there's going to be unsteady. Nishta means steady. So, I think I was mentioning this yesterday, or maybe it was some other devotees. Or maybe I was mentioning, you go to India, you go to Vrindavan, and when you're in Vrindavan, you think, "That's it. I'm never coming down again to the material plane." It's like, I'm there, right? Because you're in that environment. And then you come back to England, and after 3 weeks you think, "I'm never going to get to that Vrindavan plane again," because the environment changes. So, because we're conditioned souls, we tend to be going up and down. But we're very affected by the environment, and affected by subtle things that we saw, we heard, we tasted. And not necessarily yesterday when everything was good. You're not necessarily being affected by yesterday. You've got like 10 zillion yesterdays for so many lifetimes. And so sometimes it just comes up. Don't underestimate the power of pizza at midnight. You know, that also does have an effect. Someone had some crazy dreams. Someone was telling me he had some crazy dreams. No. I was with Kripa Moy yesterday, and he said, one devotee said he had a dream with me, and I was telling him this, some, you know, very transcendental dream. I was instructing him and giving him initiation or something. I said, what did you tell him? He said, were you eating pizza that night before you went to sleep? You know, so sometimes, well, it must have been pretty transcendental pizza. But, you know, you can be affected by anything. That's what it means to be conditioned. That, you know, you'll have a great day and a bad day, and you won't be able to figure out. And you'll have the bad day when you chanted good rounds, and the good day when you chanted bad rounds. And it's. But as you continue in devotional service, it stabilizes. That's called nishtha. So, you look pretty unhappy with that answer. All right. Is there a better answer? I don't know if there's a better answer. It's a reality. Yeah. It's a reality we have to. It's a reality we have to accept and tolerate, because we're. In other words, we're paying a price for being a conditioned soul, and we want pure devotional service. And what you see by staying in devotional service, that you really have to want pure devotional service, because there are going to be so many challenges. And Maya is going to give you so many reasons to say, this is like too hard, too much trouble, you know. And then comes Ekadasi, and you're traveling, and there's nothing to eat. And you got to read all the labels 3 times. And go, this is too much trouble. If I wasn't a devotee, I could just eat anything. Right, and then this new movie came out, but there's like, I want to see it, but it's Big Maya. And if I wasn't a devotee, I could just see it, you know. So, and Maya's saying, yeah, it's too much trouble. Just take it easy, right? That's just the reality. That's what it's going to be like, you know. And you just have to learn to get used to it, and cultivate. Cultivate the reasons why you want to be a pure devotee. Because the reasons are your inspiration. And if you don't have good reasons, Maya will come and definitely give you good reasons not to be a devotee. So in reading Prabhupada's books, we cultivate these good reasons. And so your desire for Krishna, as long as it's stronger, then this other ups and downs is just like, whatever, it's like a bumpy road, that's all. Pebbles in, like I call it, pebbles in your shoes. Uncomfortable, but not a big problem. Bumpy road. Uncomfortable, but not a major problem. You just drive around the potholes. Right? Well, maybe you don't have potholes here, but when I was in Mauritius in the 80s, although every road had potholes, right? And so we're not used to potholes. So if there's, you drive around them, but Westerners, we just drive in them. And all the Mauritian devotees says, all you Westerners, you drive right in the potholes, because we don't have any in the West, so we don't know. So after a while, we learned you have to drive around the potholes. You know, otherwise, you keep hitting them, and they're like every 100 meters. So it's a little bit like that. It's just you have to get used to it. But as you progress, there's less potholes. Then you get to nishtha, and then the potholes are pretty small. There's less of them, and they're smaller. Then you get to Ruchi, and it's all over. It's just downhill. It's just sweet. That's it. You know. So I would recommend getting to Ruchi ASAP. Because once you get to Ruchi, it's like it's all easy. Because now everything you're doing is because you have a taste. And when you get Ruchi, Maya, there's no taste for Maya because you have taste for Krishna. Such a deep taste for Krishna, Maya's like, who would do that? That's like, you know, why would you be envious? You just suffer. Why would you be proud? It just destroys your bhakti. Why would you want to enjoy the opposite sex? You know, that's just pure lust. It's totally antagonistic to Krishna. That's ruchi. And so it's like, no problem. But it'll take a while to get there. And but just keep that vision in mind that that's what you're getting towards. And it's worth it. Because if you don't do that, you're just going to stay like a yo-yo, you know. Yo-yo Prabhu. You know, yo-yo Prabhu. One day it's good, one day it's bad. And Yo-Yo Prabhu is getting, he's really happy when his, everything is good. He got the maha, you know. Got his favorite service today. But tomorrow somebody else got the maha and he has to clean the toilets and he's not happy. That's Yo-Yo Prabhu. And so you, yeah.
If you have ruchi and means interest in service, in servicing the Lord, but you have desires as well.
Yeah.
So,
what's going on?
Because we have interest and we are focusing on only the service.
Yes.
Then how we will fulfill our desires? Or if we don't fulfill, then we won't be like steady as well.
Yeah. You're asking about what to do with the desires?
Yeah.
Well, there's two things I want to say about ruchi. We all have some ruchi for service and for chanting like that. But ruchi is also a stage. So when you're on the, there's a difference between saying, well, like this is, you know, I've got a taste for Harinam Sankirtan or I've got a taste for deity worship. That's ruchi. But ruchi is a stage where everything in Krishna consciousness is tasteful and everything in Maya is not tasteful. So that's a stage. So she's asking, what do you do with your desires? You have two choices. Can the desire be employed, dovetailed, used in Krishna's service? Is it dovetailable? Like, you know, you want to have a family? Okay, that's no problem, dovetailable. Have children, raise them as devotees, have programs at your home, donate some money for projects, you know. So that's, you know, okay. Then you've Krishnaized that situation. You want to do art? Okay, you can paint Krishna, no problem. You want to sing? You can sing for Krishna. Yeah. So, but there may be some desires that are just, they're not within the realm of dovetailability. They're just kind of sinful or not really dharmic and not so, like, so those are harder to dovetail. Although sometimes Prabhupada would show us how to take these base qualities like lust and envy and like that. And he said, well, if you're going to be lusty, be lusty after Krishna, which is, you know, like, how do you do that? But it's a general idea. Think, how could I use this quality in Krishna's service? You know, so forth, you know. And you may need guidance from other devotees to help you. Sometimes it's obvious and sometimes it's not. And then the other thing is you have to ask yourself, okay, I have this desire, I'd like to dovetail it, but what's going to be the result? Is that going to actually be good for me or bad for me? Because sometimes you like something so much that you kind of forget you're doing it for Krishna and it's more about just you. So you have to be a little careful with that. You know, I like to sing, so I want to sing for Krishna, but I have such a strong desire to be famous. So you might think, I'm not going to do that because I know that desire is going to come out in that environment. I'm not pure enough yet. So maybe I'll sing at home, but I will not sing to an audience until I become a little more humble. So you have to, you know, or I want to make money. I want to make lots of money for Krishna. You know how many devotees said that we've never seen again? Either they fell into Maya trying to make money and made no money because all they did was work, or when they finally got the money, they forgot Krishna, you know. So you have to have a very pure mind. You say, I like money and I think about making money. Okay, fine, no problem. But you have to have a pure motive in why you're making it. Otherwise, if you know, then it's just you're expanding your material life unlimitedly, and that's not going to be good. Right? Of course, you have a lot of money, you'll have a nice house, nice car, but you do so many other things with that money to spread Krishna consciousness. It's not a problem. There was one, I don't know if he was a Christian, who he said, if you want to make money, step one is think about something magnanimous that you're going to do with the money before you make it. I really like that. I thought, yeah, because he wants to get the purity in there. Don't just make it for yourself. That is like, what's the point? Everybody's doing that. You'll be another rich, unhappy person. But, you know, see how I can use it for Krishna. And then you make a lot of money, use it for Krishna. That money will make you happy. Otherwise, there's a lot of depressed rich people, right? So unless you can use something to serve Krishna and advance in Krishna consciousness, that thing will frustrate you. Because if it takes you away from Krishna, it might be the very thing you always wanted. If it takes you away from Krishna, it'll completely frustrate you. And you'll end up hating that thing, because that's the thing that took you away from Krishna, even though you thought that's the thing you want. Did that make sense?
Yeah, I understood. Yeah. It means your motives should be synchronized with
the service. Yeah. One time, there was a man, he became a devotee. He was about 35, a professor, during Prabhupada's time, but his family didn't become devotees. And so his wife was not vegetarian, the kids were not vegetarian, and he was very confused, what should he do? And he wrote Prabhupada, said, what should I do? And Prabhupada said, do what's favorable for bhakti and avoid what's not favorable. And Prabhupada did not want to tell him what to do, he wanted to give him that guideline. And you know what happened to him? He died in a car accident. I think Krishna just took him out of that situation, because it was an impossible situation for him. But I always remember that instruction. It's so simple. And when you're confused, should I do this or do that? Always bring that into the equation. What's favorable for bhakti? You know, so I really want to do this, but how am I going to end up if I do it? You know, I'm going to make 10 million pounds for Krishna. Yeah, well, by the time you get 10 million pounds, will you be a devotee? You know, that's the question, right? Hopefully, yeah, but if there's some other motive there, maybe not. At least we've seen that happen. We've seen both things happen. Hare Krishna. Yes. The man with more questions than I can answer.
Hare Krishna. With anartas, sometimes we feel that we've overcome the anarta, and then maybe like a few years later, the anartha comes up again.
Right.
And it's actually sometimes even stronger than it was before. How do you deal with that, and how do you not become disheartened?
Mm-hmm. You have to deal with it. You have no choice. It is disheartening, for sure. But I'll tell you a story. The devotees were once trying to figure out how Lord Brahma, who is the head of our sampradaya, could have had a problem. It's just so confusing. And they asked Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, from this story, Lord Brahma was chasing his daughter, which is kind of like as low as it goes, right? It's completely confusing, bewildering. And the Prabhupada said, if this is Lord Brahma having a problem, then you should be really cautious. That what about me? If this can happen to him, this can happen to me. So that's one lesson. You know, you said that, you know, I thought I conquered this, right? Don't ever think you've conquered anything. That's the lesson. Yeah, I'm above it all, you know. Prabhu, you were like 5 hours in the room doing an interview with, you know, Mrs., you know, UK, you know, you shouldn't do that. No, Prabhu, I'm over that. I don't, you know. Well, if you're over that, you wouldn't do that. That's, you know. So, Prabhupada, you know, there's this verse that says, or Prabhupada said, a man should never think they're liberated in the presence of a beautiful woman. Like, don't, you know, like, I'm transcendental, you know. We feel that way. I said, I don't feel anything. I feel that way. But the lesson is, you have no idea what's down there and what's going to come up, you know, that you think. So the lesson is, be careful. I had that experience like 5 years ago. Something came up. It wasn't a desire I ever had. It came up. And I was like, where did that come from? I didn't even know I had it. I was like shocked. It wasn't like a big problem. It was just crazy. So I think we should never assume that we're as pure as we might think we are. A lot of times, what's happening, the way I understand it, it's like you take off the plane, on the plane, you get high enough, it's sunny. And you think everywhere it's sunny, but then you come back down, it's cloudy. So sometimes, We're chanting, dancing, everything's great, nice association in the Dham. We're transcendental. So, you know, we got all kinds of clouds down there. We just don't see them. And then the plane comes down sometimes. And then, whoa, clouds. I didn't think I have any. So sometimes we're transcending but not yet purifying. And we need to know the difference. Do you ever have that experience? You think like, this is it. I'm transcendental until Bhakti, you know, Susan shows up. And it's like, well, I'm not as transcendental as I thought I was. Or so-and-so shows up and I'm so envious of him. Oh, I thought it was over that. So that's the message Prabhupada gave. You know, if this can happen to elevated devotees, how much cautious we should be. So it's interesting, you know, like, oh, I can do this because I'm liberated. No, if you're liberated, you wouldn't do it. That would be a sign you wouldn't do it. It's a sign you're not liberated because you like doing it. So that's one way of taking it. And I just take it as a reality check. It's like, thank you, Krishna, for showing me what's in there, because I thought it wasn't. And I guess I was an illusion.
How do you differentiate between the transcending and the purification?
If you think you're on a level that's pretty high, you're probably not. It's probably premature. You know, it's premature for your level. Just take it as mercy. Thank you, Krishna. You're giving me mercy. I'm feeling like... There was a time... This is so funny. We'll end class with a funny story. And I think it'll help answer your question. There was a time I was facilitating lots of japa retreats. It was like every month, right? So I go to japa retreat and my japa gets, you know, 5-point upgrade, you know. So it was like, you know, really good japa. And there's not enough time for it to come down because I go to the next retreat. You know, I'm facilitating. So I have to chant good japa, you know, at least a week before I'm facilitating. If I don't chant really good japa, like, what can I say? You know, who am I? I'm telling you how to chant. So really high. And then, you know, slightly coming down. And then next retreat, then I got to prepare, go higher. Then the retreat, go higher. I was like on cloud 108 in Krishna consciousness. And I met a god brother, and he asked me how I'm doing, and I said something in all seriousness, and I didn't realize how funny it was because I was feeling this way. I said, I'm doing great. I've got no Maya in my life. And he was like, who you think you are? And then I realized what I just said. But that was my experience from chanting so purely, like I didn't notice like there was any Maya. It was just like Sarup Shakti and no Maya Shakti. Later on, Maya came back and said, no, I'm still around. You know, you had a little vacation, good japa, you know. So it was just funny. I actually thought there was no more Maya in my life. Like it's over, you know. And if we think like that, what's going to happen as a conditioned soul? My sadhana will become weak because I don't need it because, you know. But how did I get over the Maya? It was from good sadhana. And it's just, you know what I'm saying? It's like, so Prabhupada's basic message is like, you know, just more or less we should just think it's mercy when we're not feeling the pullings of this world. It's the mercy of the holy name. That's how I feel. And I see the holy name can do amazing things and I get amazing realizations, but I never think that's me. And you know those amazing realizations you have that you can't remember anymore? You ever have those? Like 3 days later, what was that realization? Like, where did it go? And do you ever have a realization? It's like, whoa, where did it come from? Wow, that's amazing. And you get some realization and you go in Prabhupada's books. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in his Bhagavatam commentary, that's the realization I had. Well, maybe Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gave it to you. And then, you know, he ate too much pizza last night and maybe he took it away. So we're kind of helpless, you know, and I think that's the best position for us. This is how I feel. I feel like I have to have good sadhana and chant good rounds because my advancement depends on my realization. and I have to study Prabhupada's books, I have to do certain service, because I need these realizations. So I'm always praying to Krishna, give me strength, give me realization, so I can do the service. And so when I get it, I always know, thank you, you gave it to me. I never think it's because I'm so smart or advanced, because that would be suicidal. So it's kind of a healthy way to just, your whole life, never think you're there. And when you become a pure devotee, definitely you'll never think you're there. You'll just think, this is totally Guru Kripa. That's it, nothing else. It's just mercy of my guru. I am nothing. I'm a big nonsense nothing. And anything I can say, this anything, this nothing nonsense says, it has to be the mercy of my guru, because I definitely couldn't say these things because I'm rascal number one. And that's, it's a reality, but when you become pure devotee, you live in that reality every moment. This is my guru's mercy. So, Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gopremanandi, Hari Hari Bol.